Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C. This is Agriculture Today.
The problem with this virus infection is that when the animals get infected with any one of these virus, and more important is the herpes, they immunosuppress, and also herpes time to time come back, immunosuppress again, and those cattle can get infected with the secondary bacterial infection, which is called Mannheimia hemolytica.
Louisiana State molecular virologist Shafiqul Chowdhury on a new BRD vaccine.
Now, that bacteria normally lives in the animal respiratory tract. However, when there is immunosuppression or some viral infection, they colonize or they go to the lung and produce a lot of bacteria and ultimately get pneumonia and they die. So that's the major problem in the field when the virus, the animals get infected.
This is Agriculture Today.
Well, first of all, let's look at the vehicle they use, the Congressional Review Act.
USDA proposing beef imports from Paraguay. Kent Backus is with the National Cattlemen's Beef Association.
It's one of those powers that Congress has where within a short time period after a rule or regulation goes into effect, Congress can pass a resolution that discourages that or that, you know, condemns it, whatever you want to call it, negatively views that regulation. And if it is passed by both the House and the Senate and signed by the president, then that resolution or that regulation becomes null and void. And the agency can never promulgate another regulation that, you know, mimics what that previous regulation was. So, you know, that's an important tool, and it's not commonly used. Part of that is because it's so difficult to get the House and Senate to agree on anything. But for this example, this was a pretty important use of this tool. So what happened was there was such an outcry from the cattle sector, from the U.S. cattle sector, because we didn't agree with the process that USDA used to approve Paraguay. And because of that, you had 70 senators that stepped up and said, you know what, we agree with what the industry is saying. We don't think USDA's process was as thorough as it should have been. And because of that, we're condemning this rule, and we want USDA to roll it back. So the fact that we were able to get 70 senators from, you know, both Republican and Democrat ranks to agree on this was huge. I mean, you had everyone from essentially Ted Cruz to Bernie Sanders that supported this. And when are you really going to find, you know, senators from that broad of a spectrum to agree on something? So, you know, when we asked the Senate to engage on this, and there was really a strong outcry from the countryside to do that, it's because we reviewed the process that USDA had used. When USDA initially proposed the rule to allow Paraguay to have access to the U.S. market, they posted, they posted some economic assessments. They posted some other reviews. It basically said that there's minimal risk to the U.S. market. Now, that risk assessment, everything that they had published, was on the food safety side. We didn't really have any issues there because they were very thorough. They were very, very transparent with the information. And by all means, it looked like, you know, like Paraguay does provide an equivalent level of safety on the food safety side of it. Well, with that said, the Food Safety Inspection Service had been down there to confirm Paraguay's claims, and they'd been down there within the last couple of years. So it was current. However, on the animal health side, very different story, because the risk assessment that APHIS used was based off of site visits from 2014 and 2008. There had been no recent site visits in over a decade. So all we were asking USDA to do was to hold off on this and don't proceed with this until we can actually have government auditors down there to confirm all of Paraguay's claims.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
We had that massive dip from September into December, and then we saw a pretty decent rally from December into a couple few months ago, February, March timeframe, a bounce back up to 184.
Bob Mowers with Manduka Trading Chicago.
So that bounce to the upside gave back in price about half of what we had lost between that September and December timeframe. And I'm looking at the live cattle futures when I'm talking about this, but something similar happened with the feeder cattle with a big break from September to December in feeder cattle. And then again, a pretty good rally gaining back half of that loss, all right, into the first quarter of this year. So the markets had pretty good swings based on really what's expectations for availability on the supply side, demand side, right? This year, old-fashioned supply and demand scenario and what people are thinking going forward. I don't know where it's going to go over the short term. It kind of feels to me that this break that we've seen over the last few weeks might be petering out a bit. It's not just because the market is up today. I don't think one day can make a big difference if the overall trend has got solid reasons to continue, but nonetheless, I just think that there is the fact that in terms of the quantity expected, you know, the actual amount of cattle had available for this year in 2024 for the remaining, you know, better part of three quarters is going to decrease relative to years past. So there's that lack of availability readily out there. The big question, I guess, will be whether or not, you know, the demand is going to be sustained. And really, one of the factors pretty much in most of the markets I look at is just math, right? Whether the guys who are either producing a commodity or have to procure a commodity for processing it are making money. And those are the things I think that really start playing into the marketplace. The bigger picture is that there's less head out there. The week to week and month to month is, are people making money and can they sustain those losses for a little bit because they can't sustain them forever or they go out of business. And I guess I'm referring to the Packers, you know, there's points in time where they do live in the red, shall we say, but they can't stay in the red. So things need to adjust in terms of prices out there. And I think that's kind of what we're seeing happening over the last 5 or 6 months with some of those adjustments into expectations. Some of the external factors like the managed money, which is very important because when you think about the quantity of contracts they can control at any one particular time and what that is relative to the overall volume and open interest for a particular commodity can be substantial. So that's one of the reasons that we watch the Commitment of Traders report really closely to see what the managed money is doing. And of lately, the latest report that came out showed that the managed money category of traders was net sellers of about 16.3 thousand contracts. That was through April 9th. So that reduced their net long from, I guess it would have been all 52 or 53,000 contracts down to about 37,000 contracts. And that was the fourth straight week of selling. So, you know, they're hitting the exits thinking that things are a little bit overpriced. And once they hit the exits, they tend to do so in unison. Not always, but they tend to do it so in unison when you see it. They're all looking at the same fundamentals. It tends to put some pressure in the prices. So I think maybe what I'm saying is hopefully the worst of that short-term selling and kind of lightening up of their positions is over, and that might be another reason why the market's able to kind of like build a bit of a base here and maybe turn around. So we'll keep an eye on the cash market, see where it wants to start trading this week. Cash is called, I believe, steady to start out this week. We'll see if that comes into play. Obviously, we need to keep an eye on the grain markets, too, because they can have influence in the cattle markets. So that'll be something we got an eye on also.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
So bovine respiratory disease is a complex caused by several viruses and ultimately a secondary bacterial infection that combined called bovine respiratory disease complex.
Louisiana State University Professor of Molecular Virology Shafiqul Chowdhury.
So among the viruses, there are three or four viruses. One of them is bovine herpes virus 1, also known as infectious bovine rhinotracheitis. And then there is bovine viral diarrhea virus, bovine respiratory syncytial virus, and there is also bovine coronavirus and bovine parainfluenza 3. So these are all viruses that can play a role. But the most important virus is first the bovine herpes virus. This is a herpes virus that when infects a host, causes respiratory infection. And if it's a cow who's pregnant, then it can cause abortion. So about 10 to 12% animals will abort if they're infected. But this virus, the problem is the virus, when it infects a host, it goes in the nose, replicates there, causes some lesions, and then the virus travels along the nerve that innervates in the nose area and goes and hides into very close to the brain and the base of the brain where these neurons that connect to these fibers resides. And in that neuron, the virus lives then forever. You can never get rid of that. And we, human, has that equivalent virus called herpes simplex, and that's why you get those cold sores. Now, what happens is when you're stressed, then those viruses wakes up in that neuron and travels back to the nose and replicates, and then again shed through the nose, and that becomes a source of infection to the other viruses. So this is basically the field wild virus. And bovine viral diarrhea virus is also a respiratory virus. It causes respiratory infection, but one of the problems of that virus is that it also immunosuppresses. That means it will depress your immune system, such by killing those cells that actually protects you. That invites then other infections because the protection level is low. Then bovine respiratory syncytial virus is another RNA virus. So RNA virus means it's a ribonucleic acid. This is DNA. Herpes is a DNA virus. So the RNA virus is also known to change a lot. And there is a reason why we don't want to talk about that technique, but they change a lot. So that becomes a problem in the field because the virus, if it is changing, mixing, you know, it becomes a problem to control that infection.
There are vaccines.
The vaccine companies have their vaccine and they make it multivalent. In other words, they have all three viruses that causes the disease, or four: bovine herpes, bovine viral diarrhea virus. There are two of them, type 1 and 2. And then bovine respiratory syncytial virus. And then they also mix the bacteria, which is Mannheimia hemolytica, that ultimately kills the animal. The problem with those vaccines is that the way the vaccines are developed, they basically take the original virus that they isolated from the field, and they basically passage them in the cell culture many times, hundreds of times, so that they get adapted to the cell culture and loses their ability to cause disease. So when they mix those viruses together and inject into the animal, it basically induces immune response, which ultimately protects the animal from their infection. Initially, that sounds good, but what happens is that these viruses can also replicate and persist in the animals. For example, herpes modified live vaccine can go latent or reside in that neuron that I talked about and come back and time to time shed. And the BVDV and bovine respiratory, they all immunosuppresses or other complications, and that invites the vaccine itself invites some other infections. And the mere fact is that when the vaccine virus is persisting and shedding and changing, especially RNA viruses, then the vaccines they develop currently in the lab, they won't work because the virus has already changed.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
We believe in the approval process and the safety measures that USDA employs.
Kent Backus, National Cattlemen's Beef Association, on imports of beef from Paraguay.
Why was this different from some of the others? And why didn't USDA follow that protocol all the way through? So we presented this case to the Senate. These senators agreed with us and said, you know what? We don't like the way this happened. We do not want to put the U.S. cattle sector or any of our, or any of our animals at risk for the potential outbreak of foot and mouth disease, which, by the way, Paraguay has a history of foot and mouth disease, big important factor to consider here. So, you know, the Senate agreed with us and said, you know what, we don't want to put our people at risk, so we're going to vote down this rule. We're going to tell USDA to go back, and pull this thing back because we don't think Paraguay should have access here. There's a little bit more to this story, though, and I think this is one of the reasons why the Senate was so interested in this as well. We've had trade negotiations with Paraguay. U.S. and Paraguay have had trade negotiations for the last few years. The top priority item for Paraguay is gaining access to the U.S. market. You know, we talked about that in our comments that we submitted to USDA. We said, look, we know that this is a top agenda item for Paraguay. We also know that the Biden administration has been very clear that we are trying to win friends and allies in South America because China is gaining a big foothold in South America. They're helping a lot of countries build infrastructure. There's a lot of other things that are happening down there. And the United States doesn't have a lot of friends in our own backyard. We get that. However, we don't think that we should be trade bait. We don't think that you should potentially jeopardize the health and safety of the U.S. cattle herd to win some friends in South America. So we laid out really clear scientific cases as to why USDA should not proceed with this. And USDA just pushed aside our concerns. So not only did we continue to push this, but we engaged our allies on Capitol Hill. And this just goes to show you that Congress, you know, does listen to constituents. And our constituents were very vocal and laid out a very rational, science-based case as to why Paraguay should not have access here and to how USDA kind of messed up the process. So this is one of those things that we're going to continue to work on, because getting this through the Senate is just the first step. We still have to get this through the House. And as everybody knows, the House is a bit of a mess right now. They barely passed the bill to fund the government. And there's still some questions of whether, you know, the speaker is going to be there. There's always threats of, you know, turning over the speaker. And then you got to have President Biden potentially sign this thing. And that would be a big blow to USDA. So there's a lot of moving parts on this, but I mean, the case we've made is very solid. I think there's strong bipartisan support across Capitol Hill. And I think at the end of the day, you know, President Biden, you know, and especially in an election year, doesn't want to really do anything that's going to rock the boat with agriculture. So I think our chances are good. We're going to continue to push this. And at the end of the day, we want USDA and the Biden administration and whoever's in charge to treat all of our trade partners the same. And if they want to do business here, then they need to be able to show that they can provide an equivalent level of safety. And the government needs to be able to document every step of that. We didn't see that with Paraguay, and that's why we've taken this position that we have.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
The mood of the moment in terms of the weather and the grind to get downtown.
Weather used to have a bigger factor on markets, especially weather in Chicago. Bob Maurer, Manduca Trading.
Now, some of us were fortunate enough where there's a big train line called the Metro that runs from the northwest suburbs and heads right into the loop. And it pretty much terminates at this thing called the Ogilvie Street train station, which is right next to the Chicago River. And then right across the street from the river, so just one bridge you had to cross, was the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. So it wasn't that bad getting there if that's all you had to traverse. But that was the CME group, or the CME. The Chicago Board of Trade was a bit farther, maybe seven blocks farther into the loop. And it's called the loop because there's a big loop of the subway, the L, that loops around, right? So for anybody who doesn't know that about Chicago. Anyway, on the southern part of the loop, that's where the Chicago Board of Trade was. So I guess you could kind of argue that the guys with the shorter distance, me, who was working at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, might have had a subtly better attitude than the guys who had to walk those seven blocks in the bigger cold weather. But, you know, I do think it has, I think psychology has a big part to do with anybody trading anywhere. In as much as kind of segueing on your question there, I definitely feel like those things can definitely have an impact in the marketplace, at least in the short term. Over the long term, it's more the fundamentals and the technicals, but psychology does definitely have a place in it.
What could we watch for grains and oil seeds this week?
We did get a bit of fundamental data today from the NOPA report, basically showing that the soybean crush for March came out a little bit less than the average guesstimate going into the report and more towards the bottom end of the range of estimates. So in terms of just the crush expectations, that was lower than expected. And obviously that's a demand base on the crush side. Oil stocks were also higher than expected. So you got less crush and you've got higher supply out there. So that tends to be a bit bearish, which might be one of the reasons why we saw the bean oil and the soybeans push a little bit lower today. The biggest variable I think that the market's trying to grapple with right now in terms of pricing is the differential between what the USDA is seeing as production estimates down in South America and what those in South America are seeing as estimates for their production. For example, USDA has Brazilian soybean crop at 155 million metric tons. The Brazilian government's got it closer to 146.5. So that's, what, 8.5 to 9 million metric tons differential. A differential is not abnormal, but normally it's like 1 to 4 million metric tons, not as close to 8. So there's a big gap there between two different opinions on the quantity that's coming out of South America. If you look at Buenos Aires Grains Exchange, their soybean crop is being put at about 51. The USDA is at 50, so a bit tighter there, okay? So that's not as bad as the soybean situation down in Brazil. The corn crop that the USDA has for Brazil is 124 million metric tons. The government down in Brazil has 111, so that's a 13 million metric ton differential. So you can see, what is the market doing right now? Is the market kind of pricing in what the government down there is seeing as the probability in terms of production, or is the market pricing in what the U.S. is seeing as the probable production down in South America? And we'll have to see which one, you know, which way those numbers kind of push towards each other to get a better feel of where prices should be. So I think that's one of the biggest variables that the market's trying to figure out right now. So we'll see how it plays out.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
You know, there's lots of different products out there on the market that we can use in our fly control program on our dairy.
Kansas State Dairy Specialist, Dr. Mike Brook.
We have baits, we have traps. Within traps, there are fly strips, there are sprays that we can use on our premise directly on the animal. There's desks that contain chemicals that we can use on back rubbers, and we have ear tags that we can use. We can use some biological control, and then there's also larvicides we can include in the feed, and there's probably several other things we could maybe list on that list of many choices that we have, but here's what I want you to focus on. When you look at the fly control program on your dairy farm, you really need to look at manure management, fly prevention, and fly elimination. And it's really important that you focus on where do the flies rest on your facility, where do they feed, and where do they breed. So as we combine these areas and we consider what we really need to focus on, let's make sure that our fly control program actually addresses those key three areas, where the flies rest, where they feed, and where they breed. When we think about where they rest, we would like them to pick up some sort of chemical that might eliminate them. So this is where premise sprays really come into play and are very effective. So if we have a way to spray our facilities inside where flies might rest, that gives us the ability to transfer some chemical to those flies and eliminate those flies. Also, keep in mind that some of these products may discolor painted surfaces, so test a small area of the surface with the product that you intend to use to make sure that you do not have an issue there. Any light colors, generally white, will attract flies, so any areas that you have where you have this type of coloring might be important to pay attention to whether or not flies are resting there. So as we move on, we might think about areas where the flies will actually be feeding, and that includes your animals. Some of our flies, such as stable flies, tend to feed on the cow's legs and bellies, and these are biting flies and cause us lots of issues when we think of production. As you look at your dairy cows today, you may notice that they are starting to bunch in the pens. They'll be stamping their feet and their tails will be very active as they try to protect themselves from these biting flies. Other places that flies tend to feed are also on the face of the animal. So when we think of horn flies and we think of face flies and even house flies, they will tend to feed around the eyes and the nose of the animal. This can cause pain for the animals if they're biting flies like horn flies, and it will result in losses of production. So in our dairy facilities, usually the house flies and the stable flies are the ones that are most likely to cause us issues and result in production losses. If we're dealing with pastured cattle, then the face flies and the horn flies would be a fly that we need to control. Finally, we need to think about how we're going to control flies where they breed. So when we think about breeding flies, that's going to be associated with spoiled feed and manure in general. So around our dairy, trying to eliminate those things as much as possible would be the first thing that we need to do. If we're trying to actually control the breeding of flies, then larvicides that we feed may actually help do that. One of the critical areas on your dairy you really need to focus on is the calf area. This tends to be an area that's often ignored with fly control that we do you and the rest of the barns, but very important in trying to control the overall fly population on your dairy.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
We're seeing national reports on soybean planting. 3% of the soybeans nationally have been planted. That's equal to last year's pace, and it's a couple of points ahead of the five-year average. But similar to corn, we're seeing some pretty good progress in some Midwestern states. Missouri is 8% planted. They only have about 1% planted on average this time of year.
USDA's chief meteorologist, Mark Brusberg.
Iowa is 4% planted. Normally, they would have about 2% planted. And Illinois is 3% planted. Indiana, 1% planted. They haven't started planting in Ohio yet, but on average, they've only got about 1% planted this time of year anyway. So it's certainly something that they can make up.